getting better. Boker Tov. The title of this parak is Gidrei Adam B'Chazal. The word geder, it means a fence, and in this context it means the parameters of something. So for example, when you want to understand the halachic concept that you're dealing with, when you learn, you say, well, what is the geder? What are the parameters, the definitional qualities that enable us to really grasp what this is? Because that's the idea of what a geder provides. When you understand the perimeter of something, it helps us shape and appreciate what's inside. So we want to understand, what is the geder, the definition of an adam, a person? We're focusing on what it means to be a person. So he writes, Beperek Zeh, in this chapter, Nisfonein Be'ezras Hashem, we will contemplate Hahagdaros, the various definitions, Shel Adam, of what it means to be a person. Hanimtzaos B'Chazal, that appear in the words of Chazal, of our rabbis, U'Bezeh, and through this, Titztayer comes from the word tsayar. A tsayar is an artist. Tsiyur is a picture. Titztayer, you can imagine, you can picture. Lifaneinu, in front of us, tmuna makifa, a holistic perspective, a picture. Mehekef ha'adam va'avodaso. What is a person and what is our avoda? What are we trying to accomplish? Okay, so that's the focus of this chapter. It sets out for us, we're trying to figure out what it means to be an adam, what it means to be a person. I would say that's pretty fundamental for each one of us. What does it mean to be a person from a Torah perspective? So he has here several pieces from Chazal. This chapter has seven different ones. And he starts with a very interesting point of departure. He picks a Gemara, a passage in the Talmud, in the beginning of Maseches Bava Kamma. Now, it's a little bit strange to think about the definition of a person. How do we define ourselves from the laws of Bava Kamma? Bava Kamma is a tractate that deals all with damages. My ox gored your cat. I stole your wood. You know, I knocked over your shed, things like that. Nezikin, it also deals with theft, stuff like that. So the first Mishnah, Maseches Bava Kamma, says that there are arba avos nezikin, four main categories of damages. Okay? Shor, which means, what is this, shor? What's that? That's right, an ox. My ox gores your ox. That's one category of damage. That's standard property damage. My stuff damages your stuff. Boar. What is a boar? Anybody know what a boar? Right, a pit. In the case of a pit, it's not my stuff that damaged you, but I created an environment that damaged you. Right? It's not exactly the same. So it's a separate category. The first is my ox gores your ox. The second one is boar. I created an environment where there's a ditch, and you fell in the ditch. There should be enough. Are there not enough sheets going around? Okay. The fourth one is hev'er, hav'ara, bi'ur, beis, ayin, resh. So, for example, bi'ur chametz. What do we do with our chametz? What's that? Right. So, hav'ara, or hev'er, means a fire. I light a fire pit in my backyard, and the fire goes out of control, and it burns, God forbid, it burns down my neighbor's haystack. So it's different than shor, which is my animal. It's my item damaging you. It's not exactly the same. And it's different than, it's certainly different than boar, where the pit stays just where it is. Shor, boar, this is called hever, okay? Then there's the third category, the third of the four categories. For those who are just joining us, we're reviewing the first Mishnah. I don't know why I made so many sheets. I don't know what happened to them.
Sure.
Okay. The first mission of Maseches Bava Kamma. For those of you who have learned Bava Kamma, you probably remember this Mishnah. But if you haven't learned Bava Kamma, this is your chance. The third is something called Mav'eh. Mem Beis Ayin Hei. That's what it says in the Mishnah. Now the Mishnah is like note cards. They were edited by Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi. So Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi taught the students and they wrote it down. Arba Avos Nezikin, the four main categories of damages. Shor, Bor, Maveh, and Hever. Those are your four categories of damages. That's, if you want to know everything about Bava Kamma, that's what you got to know. But the problem is when you have, what's that?
What was the fourth
one? Hever, the burning, the fire. So you had...
That was the third.
Well, Shor, Bor, Maveh, which we haven't defined yet, and then Hever is number four. Oh, so I skipped that one to come back to it. Because we don't know what it is. Okay, sorry. All right, sorry, my bad.
Okay,
so you have the four categories, but Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi gave it as a note card. And he told the students, the fourth category, the third of the four categories, the one that I skipped, is called Maveh. The problem is that that word is a very odd word. We don't actually know what the word Maveh means. Mem, Beis, Ayin, Hei. So there are two opinions in the Gemara, in Maseches Bava Kamma, how do you understand the word Maveh? The second opinion, which is Shmuel's opinion, is that Maveh has to do with eating, consuming. So it refers to what we call in Bava Kamma, Shane. My animal has teeth. Shane, Yiddish, I'd say teeth. My animal ate your strawberries. So that's a different category of damage. But the category that we're focusing on, Rav's opinion, is that Maveh, look at the first line here, Rav Amar, Maveh ze Adam. I apologize, I got Shmuel mixed up. Leave Shmuel for a second. Maveh is a person. A person who damages is a different category of damage. If I back out of the driveway and I run over your red Rolly wagon, so then that wasn't my animal, that was me. I'm using the car as my utensil, but I damaged you directly. That's a totally different category. It's not the fire, it's not my animal, it's not a pit, it's me. And the Gemara says that's called Adam Hamazik, the person who damages. And the Gemara has a whole list of responsibilities. If I damage, it doesn't matter whether I'm awake or I'm asleep, whether I'm aware that I'm damaging, not aware that I'm damaging. If I'm in my sleep and I punch you in the nose and I break your nose, I'm obligated to compensate you. Okay? That's the background to this statement in the Gemara. Got it? Four categories of damage: your ox, your pit, your fire, and your person. You're making a weird face. How do I interpret that? Yeah, so the Gemara has a whole discussion. If you're sleeping, who's responsible? So it depends. If you're in a youth hostel with a lot of people and everybody's piled on top of each other and it should be expected, so then that's one thing. If I go to sleep first and the person then comes and sleeps next to me, so then they're responsible. They shouldn't have slept next to me. They know I'm going to punch them in the nose. But if they went to sleep first and I go to sleep next to them, that's the big... It's beyond today. You know what I'm saying? That's another time. It's also a discussion. Good. This is a lot. If we were learning Bava Kamma, we could tackle each of these things. But the point of this whole introduction, which I'm glad people are still here, is that the word Maveh is being used to describe a person, Adam. And that is very interesting. Why is the word Maveh being used to define a person? So Rav says, Dichsiv, I'll quote you a pasuk. You hear what you see where it says in the first line in Aleph? Omar Shomer, pasuk in Yeshaya. Omar Shomer Asa Boker Vegam Laila. The watchman says, the morning came and the night came. Im Tibayun Bayu. Im Tibayu. If you will Bayu. Then Bayu, which means if you will ask, if you will daven, if you will speak to Hashem, then you will. That's what it means.
If you ask.
ask, then you will ask.
Yeah, that's, it's like saying, go ahead, you'll ask. It's a repetitive for emphasis. Im tavayu, if then you will daven, you will ask. So the Gemara says, oh, you see from there that the word bo'i, which is also an Aramaic word, based ayin, that shoresh, is the same shoresh as mav'e, mem based ayin hey. So in the first case, it's talking about a person who is davening. So when Rabbi Yehuda Anasi uses the expression mave, the word ba means a person. And you're thinking, how did they come up with that? Yeah. Right? What are they talking about? What are they talking about? Right? They pulled one strange pasuk from Yeshaya that most people never even heard of. And they said, that's what Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi is referring to. So, what Chazal are telling us is something very deep. And it fits because, it's the reason why it fits here, it's because it gets to the core of what it means to be a person. What it means to be human. Because what the Mishnah is identifying for us are different kinds of nezek, different categories of things that exist in the world. So I have inanimate objects that exist, like a pit. That bore, that pit, doesn't just have to be, it doesn't be in the ground. I could also put a stone down outside your house that you trip over. That could also constitute a bore. It's an inanimate object, but it can damage. I can have a fire. I can harness the forces of nature. Or I can have an ox. I can have a living creature that's under my watch that I'm not careful about and gets out and damages your property. All those are things. But then there's the fourth category, the person. And this is the quality that distinguishes the person from all of these other forces in the world, these other items, the inanimate items, and also the living items, the living organisms. Those three categories are distinct from a person. And what we're saying, Rav is saying, is that what the Mishnah is telling us is that a person is distinct from every other creature in the fact that a person davens. What defines a person as a person is the fact that we daven. Now you hear why that's a very deep idea. And the question is, what does it mean? What does it mean that I am a person distinct from an animal from the fact that I daven? And that's what he says here in the next line. V'nikra ha'adam kan mava al shem shehu mispalel. Amazing idea. So a person now, we can distinguish ourselves from the animal kingdom, from the fauna, from the flora, from everything else, in a way that we daven, and that's a challenge to us sometimes because it brings up the basic question of how do we feel about davening? What does it mean to daven? What's our relationship with davening? Right? On one level, this idea of ba'i, of intervayu, means to need, to ask for something, to make yourself vulnerable. It is a uniquely human condition to create an environment and to feel that we can express our vulnerabilities. You know, an animal has needs. An animal needs shelter, it needs food, it needs to reproduce, it has all kinds of biological, instinctual needs. But does an animal feel vulnerable in the sense of feeling exposed? An animal is searching for food. It's searching for food. But does it sit down at the end of the day and say, you know what? I recognize that this world is greater than I am, that I can't do it on my own, that I need to get together with other people, that I need to express myself, that I need camaraderie, that I don't want to feel lonely. I don't know. I've been to many zoos. I've never seen an animal do that. Maybe I'm not there at the right time. Yeah.
By referring to Adam as a mave, like in terms of damages, does that imply that the damages could have been, like, could have he saved himself and damaging someone by asking for help?
Either by asking for help or being conscious of the fact that as a human, you have a higher level of awareness and responsibility. So whereas my responsibility for my animal goes to the extent that I can control my animal and I need to control my animal, here what the Gemara is saying is that there's a category of a person who damages who has a much higher threshold of accountability, because you do have that ability to have that awareness. So at the first level, tefillah is about needing and about things that we ask for, but at a much higher level, and this kind of brings us to the second point, is that tefillah is not primarily, although it is significantly, it's not primarily about asking for things. It's not like a laundry list of I wants. That's part of it. How would you say there is a difference between tefillah, that spiritual pursuit, and Torah? Totally different experiences, right? So Rav Kook, in the beginning, in the Ein Haya, in the beginning of Shabbos, has the following amazing suggestion. He says that Torah, in a certain sense, you could say, is an objective source of spirituality. It comes down from Hashem, and it exists on this level that is the same for everyone. It's Torah Tzivalonu Moshe. It is the ultimate truth of existence. Torah is a baseline of truth of existence. It's the spiritual ideal of life. And that's true across the board for everybody. We each have our own way of connecting to Torah, and we have our own portion of Torah that speaks to us most powerfully. But Torah on its own is this kind of top-down model. Rav Kook says tefillah is totally different. Tefillah is a person expressing themselves to Hashem. It's building a connection to Hashem from within. So that's why tefillah includes asking for things that we need, thinking about things that we want to accomplish. It's a way of expressing our inner selves. That's what tefillah is about. That's why it's very personal. Now I understand how tefillah and being human are associated with each other. Whereas Torah, we have to tap into this higher realm. Tefillah is the opposite. Tefillah is feeling something, feeling that there is something greater. The response to tefillah, so for example, you ever go to some nature experience, whether, I've never been to the Grand Canyon, but people say it's like this at the Grand Canyon, or you go on a water hike somewhere, or you're overlooking a river or an ocean, and you're just overwhelmed. You feel emotionally overwhelmed. It's an awesome sight. And you say, God, that is just amazing. That's tefillah. Because that's an expression of your humanity, of your feeling that there's something bigger, there's something magical, there's something transcendent, and expressing that. And so we express ourselves at different times. Sometimes, oftentimes, it's when we're in a time of crisis. Sometimes it's when we're feeling that moment of inspiration. All those feelings that move us, those are our inner spiritual voices. Those are our voices of tefillah. Now, we give them expression formally, ritually, liturgically, in actual prayers. But we should not confuse tefillah with mumbling words in a book. That has nothing to do with tefillah. If you ever see someone doing that, it's a very important thing to do. Not the mumbling part, the words in the book. But that's not tefillah. The words are, they're like a structure to give voice to the inner feeling, that inner awareness that there is something amazing out there and that there's also something that I need. That's very human. That's part of the reason why tefillah is so difficult. What we're saying so far, just to make sure that we're clear, is that there's a basic level of tefillah, which is about boy, about needing and asking. But then there's the higher level, which Fila really means is expression of my awareness, of my feelings, of my thoughts. That's what the higher level definition of tefillah is. That also requires an element of vulnerability. Why do you think it is one of the reasons that tefillah is so difficult? Tefillah is so challenging. So challenging. Well, one of it is the basic level, the needing level. Ask Brené Brown. How comfortable is it to feel vulnerable? Not very. Right? That's the first place to start. We don't like to feel vulnerable. There's also a fine line between boi of needing and being needy. That makes us feel uncomfortable. So tefillah is very difficult because on the first level, when we ask for things, we feel vulnerable. We recognize that there's something that's not in our control, and we don't like to do that. But the second thing is that we're trapped in this high-tech, fast-paced physical world, and tefillah really relates to the inner spiritual, emotional voice. But that's very difficult to hear today. We are so busy and so overprogrammed and so stressed out that to express, to take a moment to lay back at the end of the day and say, wow, these are the things that are really troubling me. These are the deep fears, the deep wishes, the dreams that I have. The word tefillah comes from the word lehispalel, which is a reflexive form of filalti, for me to dream. In an ideal world, tefillah is like, oh, these are my dreams. Yeah.
It goes back a little bit to what we were talking about last week, how the words of the sitter could potentially be the person who's not necessarily very in touch with their emotion or their connection. It's the framework for which they, so if your actions affect your emotions versus your emotions affecting your actions. Does that make sense?
Absolutely. That's why there is a sitter. If you waited to pray for Israel and for Yerushalayim for the moment that someone bought you a ticket to go to Israel on Yom Yerushalayim and watch 40,000 people daven at the Kotel, how often would you think about that? That's the feeling. Ultimately, the people who are so connected, when they daven, halavai should ever get to this level, when they say for Yerushalayim Ircha, when they get to that level, they're mamish, that's what they feel. They wish there were 40,000 people at the Kotel every day, you know, experiencing that closeness to Hashem. But you can't wait for that. So what we do is, we're going to give you a little paragraph for Yerushalayim Ircha, and that's going to remind you, don't forget there's a picture out there in your mind's eye that you once experienced or you saw online or you heard about or you read about that you can tap into. All the pieces of the Siddur, as you're saying, are there as little cue cards for us. You know, hey, maybe we take it for granted that we got up this morning and we were healthy enough to either walk here or drive here. Now, there are some people who don't have that. So we have the little cue card that says Rifa'enu. And then there are people who are worried about what's in their bank account at the end of the day. So there's a little cue card that says Baruch Aleinu. Or there are farmers in Israel who are worried that they're not going to have food to eat because it didn't rain enough. So all the pieces of tefillah are cue cards for what we should be dreaming about. You'll notice, therefore, that the first part is all about our personal dreams, what we want for ourselves, spiritually, physically, and then the second part is about what our community, our nation needs. So now Revolvi says, I understand very well why Maveh is the Adam. An Adam is a person who has dreams, who has aspirations, who has an awareness of everything that's going on a deep level in life. And that's expressed through tefillah. Now, maybe we never thought about tefillah like that. Tefillah, we think about as words, or we think about it as, people translate tefillah as prayer, but that has the connotation of praying, like a praying mantis, like begging. part of tefillah is begging, is asking, but that's not the whole thing of tefillah. Tefillah could be protesting, being angry. That's also part of tefillah. Tefillah is bringing up the human spirit and expressing it to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, connecting to Hashem through the uniquely human experience. That's what tefillah is. And that, he says, is why we refer to it as a hagdara of a person. A person who doesn't pray, who doesn't daven, who doesn't feel that there's something that gets them excited. So then, they're not really a person. That inner drive to belong, that might drive them to join a fantasy football league, or to cheer on their local soccer team, or to choose a particular article of clothing to wear. It's coming from a deeper place, right? We have to remember that place is what's bringing us when we're at our highest. That's bringing us back to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, but that's what's making us human. To be human is to have tefillah, is to be able to express our deeper inner selves. That's the first Hagdara. And that's why he explains, and we'll close with this, he quotes, you see in the second paragraph here in Aleph, Zui Hagdara HaHolemes Es HaAdam. This is the definition. It carries the entire person. Ki Mikol HaNivraim, from all the creations, Hu Yechidi, he is alone, HaOmed Lefnei HaKadosh Baruch Hu, who stands before the Ribono Shel Olam, Umedabra Ilav, and stands before Hashem. He quotes from Rab Chaim Brisker, who says there are two parts of tefillah. There is the action of saying the words, but then there is the feeling that we stand before God, that we are awed, that we are in this connection. That's what it means, l'hispalel, to daven for ourselves, to have that spiritual aspiration for each one of us. So when we think about what does it mean to go through a day? Well, part of going through a day is being human. Right? Not just doing the things. And what does it mean to be human? It means to be a maveh, a person who is mispalel. It means to have a spiritual dimension that we need to keep alert, that we need to keep at the forefront of our being. That means that we have to be vulnerable. That means we have to be conscious of the fact that we have that inner voice, that inner feeling that's reaching out. And then that means that we need to give it expression in our davening. You know, davening is not about learning. Davening and learning are separate. So when we daven, we should realize that that's actually giving expression to our inner voice. Rav Kook writes in the Hakdama, in the introduction to his commentary on the Siddur called Olas Raya, Rav Kook writes that a person is always davening. Our soul is tamid mispalelas, hanishama tamid mispalelas. The soul is always davening. As long as we are alive, we have a soul. And that soul is always yearning, is always experiencing, is always striving. So part of our challenge as we go through our daily lives is to recognize that soul, is to tap into it, is to hear its voice, because that really is what defines us as an other, as a person. Thanks for coming. We are not going to meet next week.